Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today with me, I have somebody I'll just refer to as Energy. Dan Lorman is the Chief Security Officer and Strategist and Security Mentor, but got his start in the NSA as many of our very talented individuals in the industry. Also named CSO of the year when he worked for as the Chief Security Officer for the state of Michigan. We got introduced from his blog. He does a lot of blogging for Government Security Magazine and is a published author with many, quite a few technical publications, but also a couple books. So Dan, welcome today. How are you?
I'm great, Chris. Thanks. It's great to be on your show.
Definitely. And it is an honor to have you on. You know, I went through this, you know, the list of just touching some of the highlights of your career. But you know what? Our listeners want to know you. Give us kind of, in your own words, you know, not as much, oh, here's everything that happened, but, you know, how did I get myself started and work up to it? You know, what was my driving forces as you worked through your career?
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, I went to Valparaiso University in Indiana, played football for them, actually, way back in the early 80s. But born and raised, actually, in Maryland. Went out to school in the Midwest and then went back to Maryland. Worked at the National Security Agency straight out of college. Got some experience there working with, at that time, it was all, you know, protocol conversions and networks and global networks. We didn't have the internet as we have it today, but you know, got my first start in cybersecurity and really networks at NSA. Got my master's at Johns Hopkins there. Then I got married, and my wife and I went to England. Actually, we worked for 7 years in England, in Northern England, at the US-UK military base there, and got some great experience with Lockheed Martin and with Mantech International, two big cyber companies today. Came back in the late 90s and joined Michigan government and was total 17 years in Michigan government. A lot of different roles. I was an agency CIO. After 9/11, we put together, we built our first Michigan.gov portal, and I became the first CISO for the state of Michigan. Loved those years. We kind of built the team from the ground up, enterprise-wide security program in Michigan government, and got to work with Homeland Security, the first national strategy for cyber to secure cyberspace with Homeland Security, and a lot of groundbreaking stuff we were doing in those years. Really, really great team that we had, and in fact, I look back at that team, we have people all over the world now doing cybersecurity, which is really great memories. I went on to become CTO, Chief Technology Officer in Michigan government, so we had about 800 staff, $220 million budget, and then I became CSO. So we brought a new governor, Rick Snyder, who's just leaving office now. We have a new governor-elect, Gretchen Whitmer, coming in Michigan. But basically, first 3 years of Rick Snyder's administration, I was the chief security officer over physical and cybersecurity in Michigan. So really kind of ran all the security, outreach and awareness, but really all of different build a new security operations center, new cyber range in Michigan, new cyber civilian core, a lot of great new groundbreaking things that are being replicated around the country now. And then in 2014, I left government, went to the private sector, and joined Security Mentor as a chief strategist and chief security officer. And we can talk about that later, but basically we're a security awareness training company, work all over the world, a lot of governments around the world, and a lot of private sector as well. And I just love talking cybersecurity and specifically the topic we're going to talk about today, which is, talent and the cyber talent divide with the public and private sector.
Yeah, definitely. We want to get into that, but let's take a break real quick here. We'll hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're talking today with Dan Lohrmann, the Chief Security Officer and Strategist at Security Mentor, among other things, in this amazing past and career that we talked about just before the break. One question I just wanted to ask you about that. When you started out at the NSA, or what caused you to kind of get into either the NSA or security, what was your feeling back at that time and point in your life?
Yeah, great question, Chris. It was funny, my brother Steve was in computer sales, and he sold for, you know, a lot of different companies. You know, he's retired now, but he's, you know, he was kind of salesman of the year for, you know, Data General and all these different companies. Worked for IBM, worked for a lot of different companies. And he's like, get into technology, get into networks. At the time, it was networks, and work for three-letter agencies in Washington was a great place. He was really encouraging me. So I had an older brother who really kind of pushed me, mm-hmm. gave me encouragement, really said that, you know, salesmen were born, not made. So he was really, said, basically get those technical skills, get that skill set. And he was really kind of the one who urged me, pushed me in that direction. And it was more about networks at that time than it was, we didn't specifically say security, but then the other thing NSA is like, security is our middle name, right? Mm-hmm. So it was always security.
Yeah, interesting. It seems so often that it's a mentor that pushes either new people or, you hear that so often from people who've been in the industry for a long time. You know, a mentor or just an extreme curiosity with technology. But always want to know how that happened. So when we talked, earlier, and the talent pool, and you hear so much in the cybersecurity industry that, oh, we're so short on talent. I have some ideas about why that is that might be a little bit different than what I'm hearing quite often. But it's always interesting to hear that there's such a gap, but I don't see a solution, or here's the smoking gun that says how we fix this. So what's your thoughts? Talent gap, how are we going to address this? Where is it first? Let's talk about it.
Before we get into solutions, I think people really need to understand, what the problem is first. I would just start off by saying quickly that, ISC is saying it's 2 million people globally, it's cyber talent shortage, that the gap is huge. One thing I wrote about recently in Government Technology Magazine is, that we really have a huge gap with stock options and IPOs, initial public offerings, and companies being acquired. A lot of young people are, which is a good story. It's a good story for the cyber industry, but, like Duo Security here in Michigan just got acquired by Cisco for $2.35 billion. Cybersecurity firm Tenable went IPO for, $3 billion. So these companies, stock market, huge valuations being acquired, it's driving a lot of really smart people into getting going after that, right? So it's hard for a lot of your mom and pop operations, or even your local, your local government, state government, to compete when somebody can get literally, there's a lot of people who worked at Duo Security in Michigan who became millionaires when they got bought by Cisco. So I think the challenge of there's a pay gap is what I'm trying to get at. There's the pay oftentimes in the private sector is can be 50% higher, 100% higher, depending. There's a lot of people willing to give a lot of benefits and a lot of money to people who really have really good skill sets in the cyber area.
Mm-hmm. So, but if you think about the options pulling people out and you know, not getting talent in the public sector or whatnot, is it also that the companies, you know, cybersecurity companies going to market now, initial public offerings being bought, growth, new startups and ever. Traditionally, the younger generation, they'll go after whatever markets are starting up in startups anyway. And it actually might be more of an attraction to cybersecurity for younger people to have startups, because if it wasn't, they'd be going after whatever startup was there, even if it wasn't cyber. So it's more of, you know, in that realm, it seems like it's more of almost an attractor than a detractor.
No, I agree. And I think people like, you know, the innovation, the kind of buzz that's going on with these startup companies, younger companies. You know, we've all seen movies and we know what, you know, kind of what's happened to the, you know, the Silicon Valley crowd. And I know you got a big, great group in Colorado there, and Colorado Springs and other places around Colorado, you know, that are startup companies. And I think that is a buzz, but I think it's also, you know, the reality of, you know, we had a dot-com bust. Mm-hmm. You know what? That's been early 2000s. So we had the, you know, if there wasn't money in it, I guess my point is I don't know that they would be going. But I agree. There's a culture there. There's a innovation to be with a new young, you know, company. And the truth is that some of these companies will fail. Stock market crash, then I think you'd have less of that. But you're right. I mean, I think people do like to go after those new young startups.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it brings more people into the cyber market, then I think it's a good thing. But then when you talk about the gap, and we hear this all the time, back to this gap in skills. And, you know, I think I have seen, being in the security industry for, you know, 15 plus years, that the problem with the reason we have gaps is because we have a cyclical trend where security becomes a bad thing or a negative thing. And it might be changing now that it doesn't have that. But in the past, it's been three or four times I've seen a crash where nobody wants to think or talk about security. And all the professionals go out of the market at that time. And then later they come back and say, oh, why isn't there anybody? And that's why it's the cyclic trend to, you know, we can lay off the vitamins for a while and not take them. And nobody really knows until we get sick later. And security has that eating your vegetables, vitamins, your things you do in the background that isn't seen. So in lean years, it gets cut. And I think that's more of the problem, that we're at the latter end of a cut that happened right after kind of the Snowden era, where everybody looked at cybersecurity as Big Brother watching over you. And it was such a negative political sense around it that it just kind of fell through the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I think that's certainly a contributor. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the main reason, but I agree with you with everything you said. I mean, I don't disagree with anything. I think I'm a big believer in my career. I have lots of stories where, you know, I almost lost my job because I was the party pooper as CSO way back early in my career, and I tried to be, you know, the kind of Dr. No, we called it. You know, it was like, yep. I was the one canceling projects and saying we couldn't do Wi-Fi because it wasn't secure. And I kind of, you know, literally almost lost my job back in the early 2000s, where my boss said, you know, you got to get to yes. I mean, we got to do secure Wi-Fi. And Ford, Chrysler, Dow, and GM in Michigan are all doing Wi-Fi. We got to do it here in Michigan government. So I kind of learned through the hard school of hard knocks. You got to get to, you know, security needs to be an innovator. I mean, anymore, nobody wants an insecure app on their phone. Nobody wants, you know, nobody wants to get hacked. Nobody wants a breach. And so, really, I think today, as we move forward, security is like, I don't call it pixie dust, but it's got to be ground up, built secure, and it's got to be a part of the team. It's like the third baseman or maybe even the pitcher on the baseball team anymore. I mean, it's a core part of how you do business. And I think people have to think in terms of really having expertise in writing code and building infrastructure and whatever they're doing, security's got to be a core piece of that.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Let's talk about that innovation piece when we come back from hearing from our sponsors, because I'd like to know your thoughts on how we turn that around to take, you know, security is always known for putting the no in innovation. How can we change that? Be right back after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Dan Lohrmann about security and the no part in innovation. How often we've been the no, can't do something, can't adopt a new technology, and how do we turn that around? And Dan, I'd like to know your thoughts about, you know, turning that impression of the security industry in general around.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with the security pros for each of us listening to this podcast. You know, is the leadership has got to be getting on the boats that are leaving the dock. You know, it's whatever company you're at, wherever you're working today, security's got to be involved at the ground up. So as new innovative ideas are coming out, you know, we talk about artificial intelligence, we talk about robots, autonomous vehicles, whatever the new innovative project is, app. You know, security's got to be in there from the ground up. And if you're in a culture, you're in a security career, you're listening to this, and I hear all the time people say to me, you know, well, we don't have the funding that we need, we don't have the priority we need at our company. And I'm like, you know, well, you've got to be involved. And I mentor CISOs and CSOs around the world, and you know, I tell them, you know, what boats are leaving the dock? There's always money being spent somewhere, and you need to be involved in those meetings. And again, I learned that in my role as CSO for the state of Michigan, we weren't involved in some of the biggest projects early in my CSO career. We weren't in the big treasury tax rewrite, a big new state police system, these big $100 million systems, and we weren't even involved in them. And so we had to get people on those teams rather than trying to say, we need our own security team over here meeting by themselves. It's getting involved in those key projects.
And how did you go about finding out, you know, in a big organization, sometimes those key projects are siloed in secrecy. What do you advise people to go out and look for to find out how to get involved with all those projects?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, part of it is your reporting relationship and your visibility. You know, break out of the box of what you're currently doing. But, I mean, I was reporting to a CIO, Terry Takai at the time. She went on to become CIO in California and CIO for the Department of Defense. So, you know, she was very knowledgeable, very smart woman. And you know, we were at the staff meetings, you know, getting invited to the right meetings, being involved from the ground up, I think was part of that. Really networking, you know, getting out and do lunch with people, building the communication lines. I tell security pros, you know, don't just stay in the back room eating pizza. You know, you need to be engaged with the community, your internal teams, but then the wider team, you know, really being involved with industry, being involved with other groups, being involved, you know, join the softball team in the local company. I mean, really network and find out that way. But, I mean, I think as you get involved, as you, you know, more and more companies, security is a core part of the business, and you really need to be involved with the business professionals each and every day.
That is very well said. And, you know, myself and my other co-host, Abe Thompson, we, the same thing. We both teach, and one of the big things that we get security professionals in so often that are very intelligent, but also a lot of times very quiet and want to disengage from the social. And that's the biggest thing we try to teach is you have to get involved, the soft skills. You know, how do you get into the security industry, and hearing this from somebody at the top that there were silos that had to be broken down by becoming the person that is involved with all the activities. That is a great point that you make there. Now, you had earlier, we talked about, and we kind of moved away from it, but that in the public sector, meaning government, state government, that they can't pay as much. We have these companies with large options. Maybe, hey, if you're in security, go for a company that's going to go public, make all kinds of money, right? How do you incentivize people to stay or get into places? And that would include, I would ask you, teachers. We can't touch what a cybersecurity professional is making to have them teach kids in school, high school, or even university can't even touch those salaries. So, you know, how do we make the next generation work? And it seems like that's a snowball effect on the current, employment gap.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there's some great articles on this. I encourage people to go out and, read Lorman on cybersecurity. And, Chris, you can post. I've written a lot of different blogs on this. This is obviously in a quick response. It's hard to give a whole bunch of different ideas. But there's some great ideas out there. And I tell young people, public sector is a great place to start your career. I have no regrets. I spent many, many years in government, 6 years at NSA, 17 years in Michigan government, and then supporting government for 7 years in England as a contractor. But, the reality is that a lot of times in the public sector, young people get more opportunities, broader. I sometimes compare it to like a lawyer coming out of law school. Do they want to go straight into a law firm and be kind of buried in the law firm, maybe make more money initially, but they maybe never get any court time, right away, versus somebody who's a prosecutor right away who may join, a government team that they're basically right away, in the court in front of the judge, right? So, mm-hmm. That maybe less money, but they get that court experience right away. I think a lot of times, even today, there's a lot of great jobs in the public sector. People need to think of their careers as a marathon and not a sprint. It's not just how much money I'm making, this week or this year. It's I want to build a skill set so that I'm really almost like working your way through the minor league baseball chain. I use a lot of sports analogies. But, you want to build the skill set so that when I make it to the major leagues, I'm really ready to go. And I had some great experiences in the public sector, got to be involved on committees at Homeland Security, representing all 50 states, doing a lot of things at a young age that a lot of other, in the private sector, the people around me were 20 years older because they didn't have, that opportunity until much later in their career. So mm-hmm. I think public sector does have a lot to offer. There's a lot of giving back to the community. You feel a good sense of mission. I think there's a lot of camaraderie in the public sector. It's not just about as much about profit. There's other goals. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to have that sense of mission. And I think also young people can think about when you look at public sector jobs, think in terms of the long run, because I know a lot of people get a few years. It's not one or the other. It may just be a period of time, right, that they do something for 3 years, 4 years, go back out, work in the private sector a few years, maybe come back. So it's not one or the other. It can be both.
I've heard people say before that public sector is a good first job and last job for somebody's career. To start out with, to get that base core knowledge, get thrown into the fire, and then when you're given back at that later point. And the same way with education, I'm always looking for professors and adjuncts to teach a class, and we go out into the community and I pull people to bring in, like, we want those experts that are working in the community to come back and teach the next generation, but at the same time, that the reward structure has to be your desire to give back. And not I want to make big bucks, because like the public sector, the education sector is being funded by starving college students that don't have a lot of big checkbooks to put into it. So that budget's always tight, and even tighter when we get to you know, K-12 education. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. Yep, I think, you know, I see people, you and I were talking about this earlier, you know, I see professors that are doing both, too, that are teaching, and they're giving back, they're teaching. A lot of very successful people, I could name a whole bunch of dozens of people that I know that are very active in different cyber companies, have stock options, are doing really great things around the world, literally speaking at global conferences, and they're also teaching at different universities around the country, and they're doing as adjunct faculty, and so it doesn't have to be one or the other. I think, and I've also seen, I mean, honestly, from a selfish perspective, some of them tell me that they also look for the best students, and then they hire them in their other companies.
Yep.
So they're right in there in the front line seeing those students, and they actually hire them into their firms. So that may be a little bit off message for you, Chris, but I've seen that happen.
No, I mean, that's exactly where myself and other people that I work with sit is, you know, we realize that we can't find the talent, so let's go train them. We'll train the people with the skills we need, and when we see the ones that stand out and jump onto it, we can definitely pick them up. So, you know, that is definitely an approach that I would sanction, we'll say. As far as, you know, maybe, you know, government sector, what is the difference in, you know, kind of salaries? Is it a 30% difference? What are you thinking?
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, it's a good lawyer answer, I know, Chris, but I mean, it depends. Are you working for a local government, local, you know, Michigan here, we have townships, we have cities, pay's pretty low, you know, but you know, typical state pay, you know, and again, where you're at in the pay scale, how many years, you've been doing different things. It's hard, you know, so it varies. But I've seen studies that talk about 20-30% at a minimum. I also know CISOs around the country and around the world, but around the country that have doubled their salary by going to the private sector. And so I'd say the range is 30% to even, you know, 70, 80, 100%. Double. I'm talking about 100% meaning double. You know,
yeah.
Double the pay.
Gotcha.
What I was trying to get at with that initial article we talked about earlier in the segment was that what even throws that off is people are taking less salaries. People saying, "Hey, I'll go to the private sector for the same pay."
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, "Well, why would they do that?" And you know, or because they get the stock options. So the stock options and that IPO, the takeovers that are going on in the cyber industry right now throw a whole wrench into a lot of those pay scales. You go out there and you read, there's hundreds of them out there. You can go out, just Google it. You'll see different pay scales. What that doesn't tell you, though, is, you know, the person who went and worked for 10% more at Duo Security, left the state, went to Duo, and now they're millionaires because they just got bought for $4 billion. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you figure that into the equation? So it really becomes difficult when you start talking about stock options and startup companies and people getting in at the ground floor with stock options.
So if we looked at that from a little bit different angle, and I just wanted your thoughts on this, there's a lot of cybersecurity companies out there, a lot of growth. If I'm looking to get into one of those companies that I might pick up stock options, what areas would you recommend people looking for that will be a boom, or you think is the most impressive? Because, you know, not all startups take off.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I should mention that. I didn't. You're a great point, Chris. And there is a risk reward here. You know, you may join a company that doesn't take off. You know, you pick the wrong stock, if you will, right? Or you pick the wrong. So, I mean, you may. You know, you're taking a risk. So there is a risk-reward there. That's part of capitalism in America, right? So, but, yeah, the hot companies, artificial intelligence. I mean, a lot of people just go to their local shows, their security shows. They walk around the show floor, and they see, you know, they see what companies are hot. There's a lot of different areas that we could talk about. I mentioned a few of them earlier. Artificial intelligence, certainly a lot of companies working in different tool sets in the security operations center, cyber risk, cyber threat intelligence, you know, a number of different companies working in autonomous vehicles, working in areas like, we talked about robotics, but, you know, really robots and You know, when you start talking about threat intelligence and you know, cyber companies, there are literally thousands of different ones out there, you know, any given day. So, you know, you got to do your research. I mean, another thing I just advise people to do is go to the job fairs, walk around, go to some security companies. What I think a lot of people do is they go to security conferences. You know, RSA is coming up next March in San Francisco, or I'm sure there's lots of big conferences there in Colorado or other places. They go with a specific thing in mind, and that's great. You know, I need a new backup for my database, or I need XYZ encryption product. You know, encryption is hot right now, or I need this, you know, email system, whatever it might be. But sometimes it's good just to go walk around and literally talk to the vendors on the show floor, see what's the breadth of different offerings out there. I mean, it can be overwhelming at RSA. There's literally thousands of companies there. But the sky's the limit on the different numbers of opportunities, and there's more and more companies, you know, coming to market every day.
Yeah. Well, hey, kind of in closing here, I wanted to give you the opportunity to, you know, people reach out to you all the time. What types of things, what services do you offer? Where can you use either support, or what is your, you know, who do you help?
Yeah, great. Thank you, Chris, for the opportunity. So I work for a company called Security Mentor Incorporated. Security Mentor is a security awareness training company. What's a little different about us is we gamify the training for end users. So we work in a lot of enterprises. We're in 20-some states now. We're in over 30 countries, 15 languages around the world. So we're a global company. End-user security awareness, so everything from phishing and email, passwords, to social engineering, different tricks that are being played on people. People have heard of business email compromise or whaling, you know, going after the big fish, the bosses and stuff. So all the different social engineering ways people get tricked, and we train end users on how to be secure in cyberspace. So we get involved in a lot of different aspects of security awareness training. I also train executives myself. I do boardroom training sometimes. I work with a lot of big governments around the country. And we basically provide computer-based training. We can put it on your learning management system, or it can be via the cloud, you know, cloud offering right to your desktop. We provide, you know, posters and phishing simulation tools and those kinds of things. So, but what's different about us is we use a model called Brief Frequent Focus, a 10-minute lesson once a month, year-round, not kind of a once-a-year training, but keeping it intriguing and engaging and really keep employees interested. So people love our training. It's fun. It's engaging, and they teach things they don't already know. So people are learning new stuff all the time. So it's a great tool, and be happy to answer any questions. People want to reach out to me. I also blog for Government Technology Magazine, Norman on Cybersecurity. You can just Google that. And I'm on Twitter at GovCSO, GovCSO, at GovCSO.
All right, so you heard it from Mr. Dan Lohrmann. And Lohrmann spelled Lohrmann, correct?
Correct, yeah, thanks.
So Lohrmann on Security, check him out. Thanks so much for joining today, Dan. You have a great day.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye. The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.